Blog Talk Radio.
This is Mark Grace, and you're listening to Ready to Unload with Cal and Sandpete.
Ready to Unload with Cal and Sandpete, episode number 3.14, coming to you live from Bayside, New York, here on Thursday, April the 12th, 2012. It is 9:30 p.m. It is Tuesday night. It's Thursday night, isn't it? It's time for Ready to Unload with Cal and Sandpete, the podcast, live, Bayside, New Jersey, Comac. We're all over the place. Let me bring in my very fatigued, my very tired, my fatty good co-host. He's exhausted. I don't know what we're going to have, 5-hour energy. I don't know if we're going to have to intravenously do coffee. My partner in crime, my partner in rhyme, my partner in... So tired. Mr. Brian Calneva, Calpino, Cal Tired. Hi, Cal Tired.
Tired.
Well, the great thing about your fatigue this evening, though, is that it's making you talk like a stooge from Jersey.
Oh.
I don't understand why you're so fatigued that it makes you sound like a ridiculous Jersey Shore sort of character. I don't
understand. That's what happens.
So when you get tired, you become a complete Italian American caricature.
Well, that's what happens. Yes. Yes, because I can't put on these airs anymore. I revert back to my core.
You know, it's funny.
My core.
Your core. It's funny because Dr. Ire Stat asked in the chat room a couple weeks ago, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, when did the Jersey Shore Italian-American become the Italian-American? Like, I'm 100% Italian. Cal, you're half Italian and also half a Le Canadien. The French is so nice. And PJ, of course, our esteemed producer, also Italian, American. Why is it Bozo Land? He wanted to know, and I think he's right. Like, there used to be when we were growing up, there were Guidos, right? Like,
right.
From Guidos. Like, you didn't even have to be an Italian American to be a Guido. You could be anything.
No, you just needed to drive a Camaro.
Right. You needed an IROC and a dream. Like, that's all you needed there. So when did Jersey Shore become the accepted... Like, my in-laws in Texas, they think we're... I think they were genuinely surprised when they came to the wedding and they didn't see the situation. Like, why is this... I'm not happy with this.
I don't know when that happened, but you're right. That seems to be the impression of all Italian Americans these days.
I mean, did it not shift from like mafioso, like completely mafia, and now we're all blown out hair dudes people?
Well, it's all, you are also in the mafia. You either just go tanning or you're in the mafia. It's one of the two.
Correct. Peach, you've seen this phenomenon. Let's welcome our producer, of course, Cal, the esteemed Paul Cacioppo.
Hey, what are you doing? What do you say? Hey.
Who does awful Italian.
Yeah, what is that?
That's awful. That is just awful.
What are you doing? What are you saying? What? Forget about it.
That's excellent. You're really, that's top notch. When did this happen, Peach? When did it become, you know, the rest of the country now all thinks Italian Americans are the situation?
It happened as we transitioned from the Corleone family to the Soprano family.
Ah,
this is a phenomenon that started in the late 90s with the Sopranos.
I think you might be onto something.
Yep.
Yeah. It used to be, Godfather 2, Bruno Kirby. You know.
Right.
Speak Italian. Hey.
And that was like, yeah, that was, but isn't it amazing how Italian Americans didn't mind the Mafia one so much? This one we mind.
It's true. It's true.
Like being considered a jackass, like the situation.
There was a bit more status involved with.
This one we have a problem.
Assuming that you sounded like a gangster.
Right. This one we have a bit of a problem with.
At least it meant you had a career.
That's correct. I don't know. Cal, do you think, I just keep going back to your dialect the minute we got on the phone tonight. I don't understand. You're so taught. And you were dropping the F-bomb like it was going out of style, which is very out of character for you.
But, yeah, well, we're in a professional environment. I'm not going to do that now, but.
We are?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
I can't do a good, I can't even say the word I was going to say. I can't even do a stereotypical Italian accent unless I'm cursing.
That's true.
It gets weaker if I don't curse. I have to be able to drop many bombs.
Right. Well, this goes back to the fact that I only know curses in Italian. Like, I can't speak a lick of Italian, but I know a whole bunch of curses. I have no idea what I'm saying.
Well, you also know when you're in trouble in Italian, too.
Yes. No, absolutely.
Any of us with Italian grandmothers can vouch for that.
Right. You know what we should do right now? I would love to, but we can't. We should call. I would love to call Uncle Tommy right now. Call Big Pauly, because he does the greatest fake Italian. It's basically like Italian gibberish.
But he is Italian.
No, but he doesn't speak Italian.
Oh, okay.
But he'll like call up, like, and leave a message on my voicemail and be like. E quanto de questo reduno facci rugazza baffangulo. And it's like an 8-minute message. It's so brilliant. It's so brilliant. And it's all about the way he goes up and down. Like, so it'll be like, e quanto de questo reduno facci rugazza baffangulo. And it comes back down, you know. It's authentic prairie gibberish, no doubt.
It's all about inflection.
That's correct. You're absolutely right. It's all about the inflection. Anyway.
But they teach you in acting school, just so you know.
Is that?
I'm not sure if you were aware of that.
Thanks. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what they go over.
Yeah, I've never, I don't know what you're acting.
No, not.
Of course. You know, I mean, to get academic about it, you know that we owe the Brooklyn Italian accent to the Dutch.
Oh, wow. Here we go. Go on.
All right, the lecture begins. If you...
Entirely inappropriate music for the lecture.
It's the first one I could find. It was either that or I was going to cue up Living Color, which I think was bad, too.
I say, is that an apothecary who's going to give us a lecture right now?
That's just terrible. Everything I'm doing tonight is bad, and I think that's a good theme.
I think that's a good sign, yes. That's a good,
he screws up the show.
Early, that's definitely a good early sign.
You just wrote his recap.
The title of the recap is BG Screwed Up the Show from Head to Toe.
That's magnificent. Go on.
Truly, that the Dutch settlers in the five boroughs had that strong accent, and it got that Brooklynese to it when they began to speak English with it. And as they left...
Go on.
As they left and the Italians moved in, they assimilated that because that was the local English. And then just combined it with their Italian.
So that broken sort of Brooklynese Italian is actually to the Dutch.
Yeah, it originates with the Dutch. That whole, you know, hey, what are you going to do? Hey, that.
That was a Dutch that first did that.
Started with Dutch.
You
so
know,
it got,
be,
I mean, if anything, the Italians added a lilt to it that wasn't there before.
Right. You know what would be remarkable now is to hear a Dutch person speak with a Brooklyn accent like that. Like a Brooklyn Italian accent, like a really fair-haired, like blue-eyed, you know, wearing lederhosen and being like, hey, what are you going to do over there? Forget about it. Yeah, I'm Dutch. What do you want from me?
That's it. That's it. You just nailed it right there. I can't do that.
Yeah, I'm Dutch. You got a problem?
That's right.
There are literally no Dutch people speaking that way, ever.
No, they're not.
It'd be so great if they had hung on to that, though.
Hey, what are you going to do about it? I'm Dutch.
45
like
minutes
Dutch?
Of the freaking dry cleaner. What?
You are literally every bad Italian-American dialect ever. I feel like I'm going to see a really bad performance of Danny in the Deep Blue Sea right now.
You got to let me curse. If you let me curse, it'll fly, but I can't. It's too self-editing.
Funkin' A.
That's your mother father.
Do you remember that sketch, Cal?
Yeah.
Tony Danza?
Yeah.
The War of the Worlds.
The Brooklyn Theater of Arts presents The War of the Worlds. Funkin' A.
Great, great sketch.
So that was the first lesson for tonight. There'll be more to come.
Excellent. There's a lot of the sports type stuff to talk about. You know, so we're gonna do that. But I did get a little thrown off by Cal's immediate fatigued Italian American dialect. That's not even Italian American though. That's Brooklyn.
Yeah.
What you're doing is like down the shore or I shouldn't say down the shore, that's Philly. It's one of the guys that all week Cal has been doing the Philly dialect.
Uh-huh.
Because he had to go down there for a meeting or whatever. So he keeps asking me to do it because my buddy Terry.
Right.
Is from Northeast Philly, from Mayfair. And Tara used to have like a real severe Philly accent, Philly dialect. And it's really hard to do, you know? Like, we used to get voicemails, or not voicemails, we still had an answering machine after college when Terry and I and a couple other guys had a place in Brooklyn. And his buddies would call up Cal and be like, yo, Terry, what's up? It's Jonesy. We're coming up there. What are you doing? You guys doing anything? We're coming up there. Hang out. Boot. We'd be like, Tara, somebody called for you. We have no idea what you're saying.
From Philly.
Yeah. No idea. I think his name was Jonesy. That's all.
Yo, Tara, it's Jonesy. Going down Broad Street? What are you doing? We're coming up there. Get some hoagies.
Oh, that's all of South Jersey, too.
Yeah. Go see the Eagles.
We got a lot of those in my neighborhood because they moved.
What are Flyers doing? Flyers lost last night, huh? That's a shame. Down Broad Street. Broad Street. I can't even say it. Stuff.
That's a great dialect.
That's a hard one to do.
It's a tremendous dialect. Just say Eagles.
That's where it comes from.
Just say Eagles a lot. Go
down and see the Eagles.
Then I get into Pittsburgh a little bit with it too, so that's not great.
Fine line.
Yep. Cal. The Rangers are in action tonight. Hockey. NHL playoffs. I want to talk about it. Here's what I want to talk about. They're like smoking the Senators tonight. Spoiler alert. They're smoking the Senators. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was 4-0 when I came on the air. When I came on the air, because you're just tired tonight. What do you think of playoff hockey? That was the big question we were asked. It wasn't so much we were going to talk about the Rangers or
4-2 now, by the way.
4-2?
Yeah.
Ottawa making it interesting. But it wasn't so much we were going to talk about the Rangers in specific, although they have a very good team. They're the one seed. They could go very deep into the playoffs, which would be very exciting in town here.
And now it's over. Final 4-2.
Final 4-2. So the Rangers take game one of that series against the Ottawa Senators, which has to hurt you double, Cal, because you hate the Rangers and your French Canadian.
Yeah, but I'm not from Ottawa.
Right, but don't you French-Canadians
no.
all just
no.
love each other?
No. No, 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 no. The French-Canadian...
Say we.
We.
Oh, oui, oui. The French Canadian is separate than the rest of the Canadian.
I see. And where are they concentrated?
We'll get into that some other time, but
that could be another lesson.
The French Canadian is concentrated in Quebec.
Is that Cajun? What are you doing?
Yeah. Quebec, not Quebec. Quebec.
Is this Night of a Thousand Dialects? What is going on?
It's Night of a Thousand
Cajun.
Bad
That's
dialect.
Not a Cajun to me. That was good.
That was Cajun, right?
It was a little Cajun.
Little K-Block. Home.
French Canadian. Oh, no. And then suddenly I reference Running Scared.
Right.
Fine film from 1984. Starring Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal. And a young Jimmy Smits.
I don't happen to like Ottawa. As an Islander fan, you wouldn't really be a huge Ottawa fan either. So it's one of those series where you don't have too much of a vested interest in, but for the fact that it is playoff hockey,
yes,
that's where your interest lies, because playoff hockey just might be one of the most exciting things in all of sports.
I totally agree, and it's the one playoffs that I can watch when I don't have a team in it. Now, I'll watch baseball, but I'm usually very bitter. Very bitter.
You will, well, no, you will also watch the NFL playoffs.
Yes, but it's not...
Half-heartedly?
Yeah, I guess you're calling me out on this. And I can honestly say, and I never thought I'd be able to say this as a Jet fan, but the Jets have been in the playoffs a lot. Considering their history over the last – since Parcells took over.
Yeah, so go back 13 years. They've been in the playoffs at least 6 of those years, right?
They have.
At least, maybe
they
even
have.
More.
I think they've been in 7 out of the last 13 seasons.
That's, you know, that's a far cry from yeah. Same old Jets.
That's a far cry from once from 1985 or, you know, 1985 to 1998.
Right.
But look, I all I'm saying is I can take an interest in multiple series. I can flip on a game and just watch it. Now, of course, I'm watching the NFL playoffs, but again, it's bitter. Like, I'm not bitter right now watching the NHL playoffs. I'm not.
Well, it's very tough to be bitter when your team doesn't even sniff the playoffs and is in the lottery for the 5th straight year.
Right, and is in a 14-year rebuilding mode.
Hey, so if I told you Washington-Boston, no score, 10:38 to go in the third, does that interest you?
I'm turning that on.
Right?
I mean, if we weren't doing a show.
Right, but that's the point.
Exactly. Like, I'll flip that on because it's just playoff hockey. There's nothing like it.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons it's so difficult. Like, Ranger fans have been a bit merciless of late in the old office. On me about the Islanders and about being an Islander fan.
Really?
Yeah, you know, it's look, Brian, we've talked about this. It's fun to give Sam Pete crap.
You know,
it's just become a very, you know, as Dan, our buddy Dan, told me over and over again, Danny Bacala told me over and over again, it's just fun. Everybody's just having good-natured ribbing at my expense.
Right, and you have to be able to laugh at yourself.
Have to be able to laugh at it.
Right.
Right. So I'm not supposed to – right. I'm not supposed to take it personally that people continually seem to take joy in the fact that my team stink and that I'm miserable.
See, that's strange. I have a guy in the office who's a big-time Ranger fan, and the way he explains it to me is that the Islanders are kind of irrelevant to him. So there's nothing, like, really to hate about them.
It's very different, though, for a lot of Ranger fans, Cal, because that's the one team – that no matter how much of a joke they become, when I'm forced to, take out the 4 straight Stanley Cups in 4 years and take out the greatest. And thankfully, even though we were young, we watched it.
You know, right.
Even though we were 9, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, we watched it.
Right, we experienced it.
We experienced it. We didn't experience it as adults, but we experienced it as kids, and we watched every game. So
it counts on our ledger.
It does. And when the 27-year-old Ranger fan gives me crap about, you know, Potvin sucks or whatever, I'm like, well, at least I got to see Dennis Potvin win 4 Stanley Cups and play. It's like, I have a hard time with you chanting Potvin sucks since you never even saw him play.
Right. Or how about when they chanted at an Ottawa playoff game, which they did tonight.
Right, they did tonight. But that's, I mean, that's just, you know, whatever.
That's part, I know, it's part of the deal.
It's part of the deal. But I think the Ranger fan has, the Ranger fan will always have a bit of the chip on their shoulder, a bit of the...
they do.
That they always say that Jed and Met fan has.
And you know what? The Ranger fan hates everyone. The Ranger fan hates the Islanders, hates the Devils, hates
sure.
the Flyers, hates the Penguins, and all equally. They hate everyone.
Yes.
You know?
It's wild that, you know, the Islanders are, of course, not the big brother. You know, it's not a big brother, little brother thing with the Rangers and Islanders, but there's still an inferiority complex there with the Ranger fan. Like, we won last in 94. Yeah, 4 straight, 19 straight playoff series. No one's ever done it. It's one of the greatest dynasties in the history of sports. Next question.
The defense rests.
Yeah, that's it. Like, okay.
You just walk away. At that point, you just walk away.
That's it.
But Messier. And you're just walking away at that point because they can't stop it.
You bought yourself one little Stanley Cup. It's cute. So, but I can't imagine, it's been so long since the Islanders have been in the playoffs, but playoff hockey as a fan is, I mean, gut-wrenching.
Oh, yeah.
Every goal, every rush down the ice, you're like, no, get it out. Like, there's a power play, you're screaming, get it out.
You know what's amazing about it? The first game in round one is exactly like the 7th game in the Stanley Cup.
That's right. The intensity goes through all 4 rounds.
It's exactly the same at that level for 2 months.
Can you pick up, since, again, we're Islander fans in the constant rebuild, but with the glorious history, can you pick up a team to root for? Obviously, it's not going to be in the East. I'm just real quick before you answer that, I'm sort of amazed consistently year in and year out how much I hate the Rangers. No matter what, no matter who wears that jersey, when they're playing the Islanders, it's visceral.
Well,
like,
it's a dislike product,
is visceral.
It's a product of the sport too.
Yes, exactly.
They actually
can fight.
It's such a physical sport, and the intensity is just ratcheted up 100 notches when they play each other. No matter how good or bad both teams may be.
That's right. Doesn't make a difference.
Right.
I see that. And it's whoever wears that Ranger sweater. Doesn't matter.
It's true.
They're nameless to me. They might as well not have names on the back of their jerseys.
Right. They're just a bunch of toothless goons.
That's it. I hate them all equally. They're cheap shot artists. They're crybabies.
Right.
It's amazing. But the great thing is the Ranger fan feels that way about the Islanders.
That's true.
They do. They hate so many Ranger fans just hate the Islanders. And I think, let's talk about on the ice, Cal. Well, can you root for a team? Can you get behind anybody in this playoffs?
It's strange. I've never had a problem with the Devils. Ever.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan, but Devils Rangers, forget about it. I'm getting a Brodeur jersey. I mean,
I did buy a Devils jersey in 94.
Yes, I remember. Well, the Islanders lost in the first round that year.
They did. They got swept.
They got swept handily.
Yeah, I think it was. I think they got outscored 22-3.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. And then the Devils, that Devils series, I became the biggest Devils fan in the world.
And that was just a classic series too.
It was a tremendous series with Mateau, of course.
Right. 7 games.
And Game 7, and Messier with the guarantee in Game 6.
Right.
That they would win and get to a Game 7. I think I can get behind the Kings a little bit.
Well, they're the scrappy underdogs.
Scrappy underdog. They're in L.A. I lived in L.A. No one cares about them in L.A. Right. No one cares about them in L.A. So I can totally bandwagon jump there. No one will even care. You know, if they make like a deep run and I get on the Kings bandwagon, no one cares.
Right.
They have a hockey team in L.A.? Yeah, we got uniforms and everything.
And they stole the first game of their series, too.
They did. So I could get behind the Kings. But now the Knicks, with a huge win last night over the Bucks, right? So they're holding on to that. I think they are they the 7 or the 8?
Right now they're the 8. I think they're half a game behind Philly, who is the 7.
Right.
But they're 2 up on Milwaukee.
2 up on Milwaukee with 8 to play. They have a very difficult schedule.
They do. Oh, have we moved on from hockey, by the way?
No, well, I was going to tie this into the fact that
oh, okay.
The playoffs are if the Knicks make it, which they should. The playoffs are happening at the Garden. It's, you know, it's Charles and Jimmy Dolan's dream.
Right.
You know, both teams in the playoffs at the same time. I don't know how many times that's happened over the last 15 years.
Not that many.
Maybe 2. Right?
That both of them were in the playoffs?
That both of them were in the playoffs at the same time.
Well, the Knicks went, 10 years without being in the playoffs?
Right. The Knicks were in last year, as were the Rangers.
Right.
And then maybe the last time was like...
04.
04, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the year that the Knicks got swept by the Nets.
Right. That's right.
I think it was 04. One of the
I don't know if the Rangers made the playoffs that year, though. Anyway, it's a rare occurrence. So what we're saying is the Garden is rocking. The Garden was rocking tonight for the Rangers. Madison Square Garden will be rocking if the Knicks get in the playoffs. And the Knicks are playing without Amari Stoudemire. They're playing fantastic ball under Woodson Cal. I've run so many roller coaster and gamuts with this team this season where I couldn't watch them. I liked watching them. Linsanity. Now there's no Lin. Now there's no Amari. Woodson takes over. D'Antoni fired. Thank goodness. Because I thought he should have been out 2 years ago.
You never liked him.
No,
no matter how little you followed them, that one thing stayed consistent. You never liked Mike D'Antoni.
I just never thought his system was going to fit. I just never thought it was going to fit or work. They really seem to be playing for Woodson still. That was a gutty effort last night. I saw some of the highlights. I didn't catch the whole game. They have a very tough – they have 8 games left, Cal. Very difficult remaining schedule. I know they have the Celtics on there. They have the Heat on there.
But they start with the Wizards tomorrow night.
They start with the Wiz. Tee-hee.
Here are their final 8 games.
What do you got?
You want them.
I do.
You want to go win-loss?
Let's go. Let's do that. Let's do win. All right. Let's do win-loss.
Okay. The Wizards. Wizards on Friday.
That's a win.
Where
is that game? Where is that game?
It's at the Garden.
That's a win.
The Heat at the Garden with the great LeBron James.
Is that a back-to-back, Mike?
Is that a back-to-back? Boom, boom, boom. Bing, bing, bing. No.
I think I can pull that out.
Okay. Followed by 2 days later against the Celtics. Again at the Garden.
3 straight, Mike.
The Mecca.
3 straight. That's a win.
Okay. You're giving them 3 wins. just gonna beat the Heat and the Celtics.
Why not? Make something funny, Mike. No, I think they win 2 of 3 there.
All right, so that's 3 games at home in a row. Then they go on the road for 3 games. They got the Nets.
It's a win.
The Cavaliers.
It's a win.
The Hawks.
It's a loss.
All right. They come home against the Clippers.
It's a loss.
They finish the season in Charlotte against the Bobcats.
It's a win.
So what do you got them going, 4-4?
I think I got them going 5-3.
5-3?
Yeah.
You give them losses to the Clippers? To either the Heat or the Celtics?
Yes.
And to the Hawks.
And to the Hawks.
All right, 5-3.
I think 5-3 gets them in.
Well, that means then Milwaukee's got to play 7-1.
Right, exactly. I think 5-3 gets them in.
So it's looking like they're going to get in. Question becomes, can they get up to the 7th seed, which would give them a date with the Heat?
Well, who do you want to play? I mean, do you want to play the Heat in the first round?
No, I mean, they seem to match up well with the Bulls.
Yeah, I mean, I think with and Derrick Rose is banged up and stuff, I think he'd rather play the Bulls.
It'd be interesting, though, to see this Knick team in the playoffs. And do they, can they kick it up another notch? You know, Carmelo Anthony has certainly made – it's funny. You hate to say he's made the leap because he's Carmelo Anthony. But as a Knick, he has taken that step that everybody's
yeah.
kind of expected from him.
He's made the New York leap.
That's a good way to put it.
You know, he's made the leap here. He had already made the leap in Denver. He's the leap here and become that guy and the guy.
He's really – taken on the role as leader of this team too, which he had shied away from over the last year.
You have, if they get in the playoffs and maybe they get Lynn back, but they become a dangerous team because for two reasons. One, they can play a defensive game. At some point in the playoffs, you have to. That's why I always thought D'Antoni was never going to win a championship. Because at some point in the NBA playoffs, you have to play one or two games, usually two. That are just defensive struggles, and you have to be able to shut a team down in the fourth quarter. Dallas finally did it and won a championship and was finally able to do it to the Lakers in the conference championship. You have to be able to do that. You have to have a team that can just put, you know, on a defensive show and shut down a team for a game. You got to win one of those games 86-80, you know, or 88-79. You got to have a crappy game like that.
It's hard to do.
But this team can do that. This team can ratchet up the defensive intensity and play a shutdown fourth quarter. You know what I mean? And the other reason is you have a score. I mean, you have a bona fide score. That if you have a good defensive effort and Tyson Chandler is playing well and you have guys like J.R. Smith and Novak and, you know, guys that can fill it up a little bit from outside, but you have the alpha dog, as Bill Simmons likes to call it. You have the scorer. You have the guy who can take the ball and put up a 40-point night. You know, and then if he's having an off night, you do have ancillary scoring there. You know, you could have a Novak put up a 22-point night out of nowhere. You know, or J.R. Smith.
J.R. Smith.
Yeah, J.R. Smith. Smith fills it up for 26 and hits, you know, 4 3-pointers. They do have that. But the fact that they can play defense at some point, you know, and ratchet up the defensive intensity at some point in a playoff series is huge to me. Makes them dangerous. I'm not saying they're going to win.
Right.
But it does make them dangerous. You know, I think the real interesting thing to me, and I want to move on to baseball in a sec, but the real interesting thing to me, Bri, is that the Rangers, this is probably the best team they've had in a long time. You know, I think it's one of the more complete teams that they've had in a long time. And they do have a stellar goaltender. I am not a Lundqvist fan. Sorry, I'm not.
Really?
I mean,
why?
Because he's great, but what's he ever won? He gets the accolades like he's won 4 Stanley Cups.
I don't think he does, though, Steve.
Oh, he does. Oh, I'm so tired of hearing about the great and the king and the crap. He's never won a Stanley Cup. Can you win one for me, please? I mean, Martin Brodeur's won, what, 4, 3? And 2 of those teams he carried on his back?
You know, yeah, he's only won 2 playoff series.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
But I don't think he gets the accolades like you say that he does.
Definitely does. Oh, yeah. He definitely does. Oh, I'm so tired of hearing about what a magnificent goaltender he is. Can he win a playoff series?
Right.
Can he get to a cup?
All right. If that's what he needs to do, then you're right.
He does. I'm sorry. He does.
Right.
I
you don't like the cover of Sports Illustrated, then, I presume.
No, I don't care for it.
That's
I don't know what's on it.
It's Henrik Lundqvist, but a little too.
It's
a little
Pele,
too much,
Steve. it's a picture of Pele. That probably has you very upset.
Stop begging the question.
It is. It's way too much. What has this guy ever won? What has he ever won?
He's
didn't win an Olympic gold medal.
He's won two playoff series. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. In what, 7 years? Enough. With the, oh, he has no support. Really? Oh, the, were those Brodeur teams juggernauts? I must have missed a 50-goal scorer on those Devil teams. Please, enough.
That's interesting. It's an interesting take.
Enough. Get to a cup. Right now I take Chris Osgood, thanks, in his prime. Get to a cup. What is it? What is an NHL goalie measured on? Money, playoff, victories. Being a money goalie. You can win all the Vezina trophies you want. Knock yourself out. Get me to a Stanley Cup, and then I'll call you an elite goaltender. Okay? Enough.
Here endeth the rant. You're not wrong. Don't misunderstand me. I don't think you're wrong. I just don't think he gets the accolades that you are giving him credit for.
And he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Well, he's good looking. Come
and
on.
It's, and it's he's the king and all this.
King, what was it? King Henrik. That was his...
I get it. He gets a lot of accolades for a goalie who's never won anything.
He
is awfully celebrated in this town for a goalie who's never won anything. Never won anything.
All right.
Get to a Stanley Cup Finals. Will you please?
Do you know it's been 15 years since both teams played? I had to look it up because it was bothering me. 1997 was the last time both teams were in the playoffs at the same time.
The Rangers and the Knicks.
Yeah, because the Rangers went through 8 playoffless seasons in the late 90s, early aughts.
And they didn't make it. They made it last year, though, didn't they?
Last year they did not. They lost on a shootout on the last day of the season.
Right, the Rangers lost. They lost the 8th seed last year. That's right.
Right.
So, wow, 15 years.
That's crazy. You know, because back when we were young,
that's
every year.
A lot of bad basketball and hockey in the Garden.
I know, but when we were, you know, in high school and college, the Garden, every single year, Rangers and Knicks played. Every single year.
94.
94 was
the
big year.
They were both in the finals.
Right.
Then the Rangers won and then Knicks lost. Wow, 15 years. So we're back. First time in 15 years. If the Knicks can close out the deal.
Let me ask you a question, Steve, since you spend
you spend
more time in the old big city than I do.
I do. I'm there every day.
I'm much
it.
More of a suburbanite.
Yep, I'm hoofing it every day.
I like to ply my craft on the expressway.
I'm in there every day, Cal, beating the pavement.
You're pounding the pavement. I'm hanging out by the malls and the parkways.
That's right.
Give me a sense of the mood in the city since both teams, this 15 years now, since both teams were in the playoffs.
Yeah, I have no idea.
You don't get any kind of
vibe?
Yeah,
I don't go out anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. I go to work and I come home.
Yeah, but I mean, you are in the city.
I am, and I will tell you this, being on the train line, being on the LIRR line, I take it every day at Woodside, or I take it, you know, from Bayside into Penn Station, and so I see a lot of people going to games and stuff and going into Penn. Ranger fans are pumped.
Yeah.
I mean, I see a lot of Ranger fans on, there's a good vibe, there's a really good vibe, they're excited about, at least for the Rangers. They're excited about the team. They really think that this is a team that should win a cup or at least get to the cup finals. They really think like this is their year. It's a good vibe. You know, the city's still – honestly, Brian, the city's still really buzzing with the Giants. Really buzzing.
Still?
Yes.
Interesting.
Still a lot of Giant gear. Still a lot of people wearing Giant hats.
You see, like I envision – two people walking down the street, two strangers, one's wearing a Nick hat, one's wearing a Ranger hat, and they both flash the number one at each other, like, yeah.
Yep.
Rangers, Knicks,
New
York. That
does not happen. That does not happen.
Interesting.
You know where that happens? In, the Let's Go Mets video.
No, you know where you know what I was thinking of was when...
Major League.
Yeah, when the Cleveland Indians started winning.
Right.
And, you know, the construction worker and the punk rocker.
Right. Are hugging. Right.
Yeah.
And the construction worker is?
is Neil Flynn.
Is Neil Flynn.
Janitor from Scrubs.
Otherwise known as Janitor.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite Scrubs
episode?
Yes. I have a favorite Scrubs moment.
Okay. What do you got?
It's definitely the lip sync episode where they form the lip sync band and Turk does the dance to Poison by Belle Biv DeVoe.
Yeah, that was.
I just figured out a name for your band. Courtesy Flush. I've tried so many times to do that dance. Ah, it's not good.
It's hard to do.
It's tough to watch. I'm not a hoofer.
You're not.
I may be hoofing it in the city. Not a hoofer.
That's fine. You're not expected to be.
Not a dancer. PJ's seen me dance. PJ can attest to the fact that I am not good. Not good. I think one of the great band moments, Cal, that we ever had, when I first joined the band and we were Johnny Rockstar with PJ.
Right.
Which was making fun of me.
Yes.
When I walked in the door, I had like a copy of On the Road and like a flannel on and a notebook, like a Marvel notebook. And PJ's like, who brought Johnny Rockstar?
Well, you know, and let's, in full disclosure, this was the mid-90s.
It's great. It was the late 90s, but it was, yes, it was 98, 99. I don't know why I sounded like maybe... I don't know why I went Lorne Michaels just then. It was 98, 99.
So maybe a little less acceptable at that point.
It was still acceptable, but I really, you know, it was like winter when I came to sing with the band for the first time. It was on, I was on tour with the show.
Right.
With the Broadway show. And it was, we had a week break over Valentine's Day. So it was February. So I was home in New York. It was real cold and it was like a cold night. I was staying with Scott out on the island. So I took the train. I had like my Army Navy overcoat, you know, my Lloyd Dobler special.
Did you have a canvas duffel bag?
No, it didn't go duffel bag. I had you know, like a CD Walkman or whatever.
Okay.
Know, for my tunes.
Sure.
And took the subway to go to rehearsal, and I had my marble notebook, of course. You know, to write my lyrics in. And I had a copy of On the Road. I had just finished reading On the Road. So I took that everywhere with me because, you know. And I think I had, like, shorts on. I think it was, like, 50 degrees, but I had, like, khaki shorts on. And,
right. Work boots, probably.
Right, and work boots and a flannel.
Yeah.
And I walk in, and PJ had known me for a really long time. The guys in the band had known me for a while. Outside of that. Who brought Johnny Rockstar? And so that became the name of the band. But our first producer had produced like a rapper or something like that. Or not our first producer. Well, our producer, the guy who was going to manage us, was this sort of famous manager. But he only did like rap and pop acts and stuff like that.
How appropriate.
Right, but he really liked us. And his note when he saw us play live was, can we get Steve to dance? This is like at the height of like NSYNC and, you know, Backstreet Boys and all those.
Oh, boy.
Am I telling that story completely incorrectly, Peach?
Almost entirely.
Wow. So let's hear the real story, PJ.
Here comes the fact checker.
Wow. That's
fact. I said fact, not fat.
Wow.
Fact checker. Well, the reason we arrived at the name Johnny Rockstar, what you do say is all true, but it was actually a name that we gave you way back when you dropped in on another band's session when we were coming down from college because we had gotten ourselves some free recording studio time in Manhattan.
Oh, that's right.
And we were all just too cool for school at the time. You know, it was a midnight session, which for some reason felt really cool to us, you know.
Right.
We were recording from midnight to 6, and it was fantastic. And it was then, I mean, you couldn't have been more than 19.
Yeah,
less.
No, I was probably a freshman in college.
And you came to the session too. And it was at that session where you were the most ridiculous person we'd ever seen.
Wow.
And we were all sitting around. This was also the session where I had gotten screamed at for making coffee. If you recall the night.
I do recall that.
And I have made it my life's mission since to be good at making coffee because I was so embarrassed.
Right. Right.
Are you good at it now, PJ?
I can make a great cup of coffee. So we were all sitting on these couches, and you didn't arrive until a little bit later. So we were relaxing after, I think, the first go-through. And then you walked in, and you did have some sort of knapsack at the time.
Oh, no doubt.
And, you know, you walked in, you said hi to everybody, and we were all looking across at each other. And then you walked into the other room, and we were like, boy, Scott's brother, he's like real Johnny Rockstar, isn't he? And so that name was actually trailing you for years.
Wow.
But everybody had forgotten about it. And then when you came back, it was like, oh, yeah, he's Johnny Rockstar.
Johnny Rockstar. There you go.
So we're jerks, and we did it to you twice, and I apologize.
That's okay. I always thought it was a great band name. At the time, it was a very good band name.
Next on Stampedeology.
Stampedeology.
Everything was going well, and then it all came crashing down.
When Behind the Music returns.
And there is grainy video footage of you and I dancing together, synchronized on stage.
Yes, that's correct.
All right.
I think it was Torn to the Side. Is that correct?
And while you say that you are a bad dancer, what people usually say to me is, wow, I had no idea you could be so light on your feet. People just expect me to stomp around like an elephant.
PJ's a big guy. He's a big guy. You are very light on your feet, though. You are surprisingly agile. Yeah. Agile.
Yeah.
Hey, Peach, let me ask you a question. Would you watch – so if the Knicks make the playoffs, will you watch a Knick playoff basketball game with Danny maybe?
Playoffs, yes.
Okay. Do you think you could get him into that?
It might have to be deep playoffs. It can't be early playoffs. Possibly all post halftime, you know.
Right. Your son is like third round or, you know, nothing.
Right.
Fourth quarter.
Right.
Five minutes left.
He's like me. He gets engaged when he knows in advance that the stakes are high.
Okay.
Like he likes the Mets. He's been to Citi Field more than I have. But I still can't get him interested in the number of wins that the Mets have. Hey, you see how good the Mets are doing so far? He doesn't care because he already knows that it's a long baseball season.
Right.
Don't tell him about it. He's seven, but he's already
beyond
it.
God bless him. I wish
I had respect. Exactly. He's learned something that the entire New York baseball media and every New York Mets fan doesn't have.
Perspective?
Yeah, which is perspective on, and it's a long season. And, like, there's no point in going out on the ledge after your team loses one game.
Yeah.
But, well, that's magnificent.
And he's a great dancer.
He's a magnificent dancer. Theo
Wilcox, what a night for the teenager! And what a night it's turning into! For Patrick Capello, the England.
I found this guy.
Right.
So now you realize two things. One, I have a theory that this is Lou Monty's version. He's completely cursing at us, by the way.
Yeah.
Like the entire song, Tony, go up yourself. And then the other thing is, you're taking a trip, you're like in a cash. The cash is advice, like we did a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I don't know how I did that.
Do you know how many people only know that as the seventh inning stretch song for the Mets?
Yes, that is the Mets seventh inning stretch song at Citi Field.
No idea that was an actual song.
Right.
And I have a Lou Monty album.
Wow. You and my grandmother.
Yes. It's probably the same album.
Probably the same album.
But what's great about it is if you let it play out, he does the second part of it in English, so now you know what he's singing.
Right. Now I'll do this in English for all.
Oh, it makes sense now. Now I see what
right.
you're doing.
Second stanza. I love
that's a more classical Italian-American accent that he's doing.
Yes. Well, because he's a genuine Italian-American.
And could you imagine if someone wrote a song like that today?
No.
Remember Shut Up or Your Face?
Shut Up or Your Face. That was a parody, though. This was Lazy Mary's, Lazy Mary.
Go get some tablecloths over there.
Right, right.
Right.
move it. For those of you, speaking of Citi Field, segue. Wow, well done. You know what, Pete? Danny would be. We were talking. Can we just, before we move on to the Mets and the Yankees, can we just revisit Match Game? Okay, we were talking about Match Game before we started the show tonight. And Cal, what's the theme music?
That's the thinking music.
Right. That's when all the celebrities are writing feverishly on those oversized index cards.
Right. Please explain the conceit of the show to me again. Please explain how it worked.
How Match Game worked?
Yeah.
Okay. You'd have
two contestants.
Right.
Yeah.
They were given a fill in the blank sort of joke or riddle.
Right.
It was always provocative though to get an audience reaction.
Yes, it was 1970s provocative.
Right.
And so they would go to a panel of six celebrities to give their answer, and whoever got the most matches got the most points.
Got the most matches to what it actually was?
The contestant would give their answer first.
For example,
yeah,
it was up
please.
A tree without a blank. And if the contestant was a total boob, she would say monkey. And the audience would groan. Oh, she was up a tree without a monkey. Brett?
They'd
go to Brett Summers, and she was like, well, I didn't know what to write either, so I wrote Richard Nixon.
I was up a tree without Richard Nixon.
And you had, of course, the inimitable Gene Rayburn as the host.
Right. I do remember Nipsey Russell being on this show. Am I wrong?
Yeah, he was on
always
a lot.
Rhyming.
Nipsey Russell, Charles Nelson Reilly, Artie Johnson appeared a lot.
Wow.
George Gobel,
Brett Summers. Betty White was also on quite often.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I remember a sound effect like that?
Marsha Wallace.
Marsha Wallace of the Newhart Show.
Of Newhart, right. Up a tree
Richard
without...
Dawson. I don't know if you mentioned Richard Dawson.
Richard Dawson was on, yeah.
Wait.
Sally Struthers.
Is that... Wow.
Just, I mean, like a who's who of 70s celebrities.
Up a tree without Richard Nixon.
This is what celebrities did then.
Right.
You know.
You did the Match Game. You made $50, and you did the Match Game.
Did the Match Game. It was fun. Everybody partied afterwards. It was great.
The best was the spinoff that they had. PJ, you have to remember Match Game PM.
Oh, boy.
That's when Match Game got really big.
Yeah. They went to Match Game PM.
Whenever a game show would get its PM edition, you knew that they were starting to make real money.
Like Hollywood Squares.
Hollywood Squares had a PM.
Right. Syndicated.
Yeah. I just wish I could see some of the... I'm sure you can on YouTube or whatever. I just want to see some of those Nipsey Russell answers. Because I have a strange fascination with Nipsey Russell.
That's right.
And all things Nipsey Russell. And it probably started from seeing Wildcats in the theater. And him being in Wildcats and being so... and then also seeing him in The Wiz when I was a kid.
Hmm.
Because he's, who's he? The Tin Man? He's the Tin Man in The Wiz. But just, I my big memory of Match Game is either Nipsey Russell or, like, I remember it vaguely. I remember Nipsey Russell. I remember Charles Nelson Reilly. But it was it on in the 80s? Oh.
Brett.
You sounded like you fell down when you were saying
like a cat that fell off a chair.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Kibbles and chunks.
And Charles Nelson Reilly smoking a pipe on stage.
Right. You always had an ascot.
Right.
Oversized glasses.
I get Charles Nelson Reilly and what's his name? Paul Lynde, though. I always confuse him and Paul Lynde.
Completely different people.
No, absolutely. Oh, yeah. But just the imitation.
Right, yeah.
Because Paul Lynde is sort of like this. And Charles Nelson Reilly is more, oh. I love that we're talking about celebrities that haven't been celebrities in 30 years.
40 years. 40,
well,
maybe
we do.
40 years.
We did.
Before.
Most of our cultural literacy, I guess, was all learned in a brief 4-year period before junior high school.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, from 1977 to 1982, all I did was watch television.
Game shows, apparently.
Right. That's all I did was watch television. But I just want to say, special thanks to Coach McGrath, who sold the last of the peanut brittle.
There's Nipsey.
Right. The peanut brittle. Nibs Arazzle.
He was fantastic.
It's just even saying his name, Nibs Arazzle. That's great to be here on Match Game. Nibs Arazzle. And peanut.
You know the rhyming couplet.
Right.
Right. Well, was that his Match Game thing?
Oh, yeah. I started out training, and then it ended up raining.
Ding, 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 ding.
Up a tree without a knee.
Up a tree with Richard Nixon.
I didn't know what to write.
Oh, Brett Summers.
Harvey Fierstein was apparently on the show as well. Oh, God. I don't know what to write.
Was Brett Summers related to Elkie Summers?
I have no idea. I don't know what Brett Summers ever did other than game shows.
All she did. And she looked different every time she appeared.
Yes.
Huge glasses one day.
Yes.
Long,
she had
flowing
glamour
hair.
Sometimes she would have small hair.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. See, you can't have a phenomenon like that anymore. We have like American Idol. You can't have a phenomenon like that anymore.
No, it wouldn't work.
And
Match Game was great.
Right, and that was when the cult of celebrity was like a good thing. You know, like it just seems so much more innocent and less like now the people on Match Game would be there because they did a sex tape.
Oh yeah, no, your panel would be like Kathy Griffin and Snooki.
Right.
Kendra.
Right.
Right. And the Octomom or whatever, like you'd just have it'd be Dancing with the Stars, basically.
Triumph, the insult dog.
I would pay to
actually,
see that.
Yeah, that would be a good one, actually.
He would be funny.
That's still Triumph the Insult Dog at the premiere of the new Star Wars. It's still that was on Conan. It's still probably the funniest 5 minutes of television I've seen in the last. I was crying.
You know
you
what
know
I've gone back.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
It was Conan sent Triumph the Insult Comic Dog to the premiere to the line outside the premiere of the of episode one of Phantom Menace.
Right.
And it's just Cal, it is magnificent. Magnificent. He just goes up to guy after guy after girl, you know, girl after girl or whatever. He goes up to the Darth Vader. Guy's dressed up in full Darth Vader regalia. And he goes up to him and he's like, so tell me, which button do you push to have your parents come pick you up? another guy's there dressed up as like Gandalf, like inexplicably. And he's like, what are you doing here, Gandalf? Oh, I'm here, you know, and the guy's eating a filet of fish. And he goes, Filet-O-Fish, the choice of all the wizards and warlocks. Oh, it is so good. If you can YouTube that, Cal, you absolutely must. It's so good. There's one woman there who's dressed up, and she's pregnant. And she's dressed up as, like, Princess Leia or Padma or something like
that. Oh, I have seen this, I think.
Right. So tell me, will you explain, he says something like, will you explain someday to your child that this is the, when he's born, that that's the last time he'll be that close to a vagina?
Oh, that's so good.
So good. Oh, boy. All right, let's talk about the Mets and the Yankees. Because the Mets started off like a house of fire. They won four games. Their first four games, they're 4-0. Everybody's making fun of everybody. all the Met fans are like, look, see, we told you. See? Met fans got awfully mouthy.
Right, especially with the fact that the Yankees were 0-3.
Started out 0-3, three very difficult games in Tampa. And then the Mets lost the last two games of the series against the Nationals, Cal, and really looked awful doing it. I mean, awful. Like, I don't know if you saw, but Madden wrote today, yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the Mets' first ever game. The 1962 Mets opened on April 11th, 1962. And Madden wrote about how, and not much has changed.
Cue the snark.
They played the same game they did in 62. They're the 62 Mets all over again. And you know what? It was annoying and disgusting, and I am so tired of Bill Madden writing about the Mets because he's a dyed-in-the-wool Yankee fan. But he wasn't wrong.
He might actually be a Steinbrenner's son.
Yeah, he might be the lost Steinbrenner. He wasn't wrong. They were awful yesterday, Bri. Awful.
Yeah, they were, but...
It's not that doesn't make them the 62 Mets. I know.
No, but they were also missing their best player, and there's not much else in that lineup if you take him out.
And if Ike Davis and Lucas Duda are not hitting,
and Jason Bay.
Well, Jason Bay's not going to hit. Okay?
Well, yeah, he's part of not much else in the lineup.
Right. But it was amazing how defeated they looked. You found out that Wright was out of the lineup on Wednesday night. About an hour before the game, maybe 2 hours before the game.
Right.
And it was amazing how defeated they looked when they took the field on Wednesday night. They really did.
Lifeless.
They were completely lifeless. It was about 45 degrees. It was a really cold, windy night. And the stadium was dead. The Mets were dead. And then when he came out, Wright came out on the bench in like the seventh. And Bay got a double. They scored a run. They had some life briefly because it was almost like, oh, he's back. He's okay. But there was no doubt in my mind once he was pulled from the lineup that they were losing that game on Wednesday night.
Yeah, especially since they had started 4-0.
Right. And then Santana and Strasburg yesterday, great pitching matchup. If I have to read one more article about how Johan would trade his present for Strasburg's future. And you know what? Johan's been a pretty good major league pitcher. Okay, can we just not really just not put the finishing touches on Strasburg's bust just yet? You know, for the Hall of Fame, can we just wait? Can we wait? That's all I'm asking.
Say, Steve, if you were to give Johan Santana truth serum,
yeah,
he'd tell you that the Mets have cost him the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's right.
Privately, he'd tell you that.
As would David Wright.
David Wright
would tell you the same thing.
Right, but Santana more so because for the 6 years that he's – 5 years that he's been here, they haven't given him run support in any start ever.
Right.
So
besides the fact that he's been hurt for the last 18
right.
months.
But they've cost him, you know, probably 30 or 40 wins.
Yeah. Okay. And again, I'm sorry. I know I just did this with Lundqvist, and I know Strasburg looks fantastic. He looks phenomenal. Okay, but can we wait till he wins 10 major league games? Can we wait? Can we wait? You know who would like him to wait, Bri? Mark Pryor. Mark Pryor is, you know what he's saying right now? Everybody should just calm down. Everybody should just really take a step back. You know who else is saying it? Kerry Wood. Kerry Wood just said, you know what, guys? Everybody just chill out. With the Steven Strasburg stuff, just chill out. I know I watched it. I saw it. He looks magnificent. You know, he's throwing 90 mile an hour changeups, Bry.
I know.
And it's a 9 mile an hour difference than his fastball. I mean, I get it. He's very, very good. He's got a world of talent. He's got a bright future ahead of him. He could be great. But can we wait? Do I have to bring up the 800 other cautionary tales?
No, you see, that's the thing, though. People don't want to wait. They want to jump right to all-time legend.
Right. Can he win 10 games? Can he win 10 major league games first?
Why? It's not necessary.
Yeah.
He's
just like Dwight Gooden in 1984. Well, Dwight Gooden in 1984 went 17-6 with a 2.76 ERA and 276 strikeouts. Okay? Can I see him have that season? Oh, wait, he's not going to. He's capped at 160 innings this year. So enough. Enough.
You want to stay on the Nationals tip. How about Bryce Harper, who hasn't even reached the age of 20, hasn't appeared in a major league game, and he's already the next coming.
Yeah.
That they're talking, you know, a lot of talk in Washington about what's going to happen in center field when Bryce Harper is ready.
Yeah.
Who's going to go where.
And I'll tell you what, that's the Nats are not a bad team.
No,
they're a good team. They run a lot of good arms out there. They have a really good bullpen. Their lineup is meh.
Their bullpen is a lot better than I expected.
But their bullpen is very, very solid, and that's without this Thorne kid who's hurt. I think the Nats are going to be good. You know what? There's no reason, and we're going to talk about the Marlins in a second and the Yankees, but there's no reason that the Phillies can't implode this year, by the way. There's none. I mean, I know they have the three aces, but there's no reason that team is guaranteed to win 90 games. I'm sorry.
That's true.
That lineup is awful. And I don't know when they're going to get Chase Utley or Ryan Howard back. You know, what's to say that the Phillies can't have, if one of those pitchers gets hurt, Cal, why can't the Phillies have the 2009 that the Mets had? I mean, what's stopping that?
There's not a lot.
They're literally one injury away to those three guys from that happening. Their bullpen's not very good.
They're kind of ripe for that, too, after a number of years of
exactly.
prosperity.
Exactly. And they're old. I'm sorry. I think they're going to struggle to score runs all year. And I don't trust Jonathan Papelbon in a big spot, nor should you.
Lose
the last two games of that series. Now they get the day off today. Now, what do you think, Brian? Is Wright going to play tomorrow?
Well, the word that you get out of the team is that he's not going to do any further damage to that broken pinky, and basically as long as he can tolerate the pain, he'll be back in the lineup. So it really depends on him. Doesn't sound like they're going to put him on the DL.
Yeah.
He should be ready within the next week and a half, so why take him out of the lineup for that much time? But, you know, I forget who it was on Twitter. You know, it was Rich Catino.
Mm-hmm.
Rich Catino, who writes for WFAN.com, does a great job. Really.
Excellent.
One of them, and you and I have both talked about it. You've complimented him directly. He's really one of the only level-headed Met writers out there without an agenda, without
Jets
the
too.
Negative snark.
Yeah, Jets too.
Jets too, that's right. And, you know, everybody is saying, oh, here it happens, you know, it's the Mets again, and he's hurt, and he's going to be out for 3 months, and, you know, broken. And his approach to this, which I totally agree with, I want to give him credit for it because it was his thought, is that it's April 12th or whatever it is, you're playing in cold weather, you've got a broken finger, why fight to push to get back in the lineup now? Wait until you're fully healed. You've got an entire season ahead of you. And the other point that he brought up, which was excellent, is that David Wright has a tendency to make adjustments. When he's healthy, he makes adjustments all the time, and he screws himself up. He overthinks things. He's going to make an adjustment to protect his finger. You know, he started off the year so well, and he's doing everything right. His approach at the plate has been better than it's been really in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Why risk him getting out of that groove by having him try to play through pain? You know, it's great that they're 4-2, And you want them to continue the momentum of the good start, but not at the risk of screwing up David Wright either mechanically or physically for an extended period of time.
That's fair. I agree with that to an extent, or to only to a point. And I'll tell you, that point for me is having broken four or five of my fingers. Lots of times it just depends on what the fracture is though, Bri. It may not be, he may wake up tomorrow and it may not hurt very much at all. You know what I mean? It's like a busted pinky. It's not a broken thumb. It's not, you know, like I'm glad they're doing it this way. Like wait,
right.
Wait a couple days, wait till the swelling goes down. It's a small fracture in his pinky. You know what I mean? It's not like the joint is displaced or something like that. It may be a tolerable amount of pain. It may be something that just sort of stings a little bit. You know, you just wait. You don't know.
Right.
And if he picks up a bat tomorrow. And if he picks up a bat tomorrow and he has to make all sorts of adjustments to deal with the pain, to swing the bat, then DL him. You can retroactive DL him to the other day. And DL him and let him take the 2 weeks and get fully healed. But
or maybe not even DL him. Just take it day by day.
But then you leave yourself short, Bri.
Well,
and with that team, you cannot leave yourself short on that bench.
You can't leave yourself short for too long, but maybe you don't have to do it.
Because they're not deep, Bri. They're not.
No, I know.
They're thin as a piece of paper.
They really are exposed.
I do. I just think wait till Friday, see what it is. If it's not playable, then just DL them and get somebody else in here. Because you can't continue to have Ronnie Cedeno playing third base. And then the beautiful part is...
Although he did go 3-for-4 the other night.
Yes, I know. And at some point the other day, you had, around the infield, you had three guys that were better second basemen than the guy playing second base. you had Turner, Tejada, and Cedeno.
Right.
At first, short, and third. And Murphy at second.
The actual second baseman was the worst of the four.
Was the worst second baseman of the four guys on the infield.
Right, and you could very easily have made the adjustment to put all four of them at their best position.
Right, which would have been Murphy at third, Tejada stays at short, Turner goes to second, or Cedeno, what would you have done?
You could put Murphy at first.
Because he's better than Turner at first? Is that the argument there?
Yes.
Oof. I think Murphy's best position is third base, though.
It probably is. Yeah, if you put Murphy at third, well, then you couldn't have put all four of them at their best position.
Right. Either way, it was, you know, I understand it's they don't want to move Murphy for a short-term period.
That's a funny – I hadn't even thought of that.
Right. Yeah, Flood had said that. You realize right now that the three other guys in the infield are all better than the second baseman than the guy playing second base. There's a lot to like of this team in the first week. The bullpen has been way better than advertised, especially the first four games. But they weren't bad in the loss the other night. They were terrible yesterday, but everybody was terrible yesterday. I mean, they walked in two runs yesterday. But I think the bullpen is going to be a lot better than people think. I think Bobby Parnell's taken a nice leap. I know he got knocked around a little bit the other night, but he could have been out of that inning if Murphy doesn't kick that double play ball, one of three. There's a lot to like there. That's all I'm saying. I think Duda will hit. I think Ike Davis will hit. I think you have a huge problem with Jason Bay, but I think that's going to wind up being a platoon, Cal. I really do.
With who?
I think when Torres comes back healthy, you will see Torres in center field and you will see Neuenheis stay up and platoon with Bay in left.
Really?
And then this way you can find out about Neuenheis too. You can find out about Neuenheis and find out if he's a player. Because I hate to say it, Adam Rubin is right. At some point you have to start worrying about Jason Bay's 500 at-bats because it vests his contract. Right? He has the vesting option with 500 at-bats this year or 600 next year. He gets that next year, right? He gets that fifth year. My God, that is a bad contract. Oh, my goodness.
Well, listen, everybody, you want to get on Omar Minaya for that contract, but the trendy thing this week was to point out that all of the homegrown players that were in the Mets lineup were Omar Minaya's draft picks.
Yeah, and I want you to go read Flood's blog, patrickfloodblog.com, and exactly what he says about that. Because he dispels that myth very, very quickly. The other day, the Mets started 8 homegrown players. 8 of the 9 players starting the game were homegrown products. And the only one who wasn't had actually played in the Mets minor league system, Jason Bay. But he was not drafted by the Mets.
Right.
But go read what Flood wrote about that. It's very, very – and everybody was trying to say that this sort of exonerates Omar Minaya from being a bad GM.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was when they were 4-0. Everybody right. was trying, oh, I hate to point this out, but those are Minaya's picks.
Right. And as Flood said, most of them are mid to late round picks that no one ever expected to be any good. And if anything, it's a testament to Terry Collins and the minor league instruction.
Exactly.
Than it is to Omar Minaya. His top picks that are in that lineup are extreme disappointments, and 5 of them are not with the team anymore. Fernando Martinez. What do you call it? Carlos Gomez. Mike Pelfrey still here.
Right.
So that's very, very misleading. Very misleading. Yeah, Flood killed it. Flood absolutely killed it. And he had one of the funniest lines I've ever seen. I retweeted it today. It was just so... it was Kirk Newen. He had notes on the series. And it was the line was something like, Kirk Nieuwenhuis's hair has officially made him king of the Lax Bros. This is Kirk Nieuwenhuis has this like, am I saying it right? Nieuwenhuis. Has this magnificent blonde, real like sandy blonde hair. Like, what's up, dude?
Well, he's right out of central casting out of Santa Monica, California.
Right. He's got the map of SoCal on his face.
He's got a tan.
Right. And so Flood's line was, I think we can officially name Kirk Nieuwenhuis king of the Lax Bros. As in, dude, Lax Bro. All right. Lax Bro. That just made me laugh ridiculously out loud. Yankees, Brian. And then Ozzie Guillen. Yankees. Holy cow. It never ceases to amaze me. They start out 0-3, then they go spank the Orioles around. Well, they didn't actually. They could have lost 2 of those games quite easily.
Yes.
That team is getting – that Yankee team is very old to me, it seems. But the scuttlebutt is the same. Every year they get off to a slow start the last 3 years. Mark Teixeira, entire contingencies that think he's done and he stinks, and entire contingencies, including Mike Francesa, who come rushing to his defense. 100 RBIs, 39 home runs. Yeah, he's got to hit better in the clutch. All right? And Gold Glove first base, okay? So get out of here. You're lost. You're lost. You want to get rid of Mark Teixeira. Guy called up the other day, Bri. And he was spot on. He said, Mike, he said, first of all, the guy was wrong automatically because he talked sabermetrics. So that was.
It's a language he doesn't even acknowledge.
Right. You knew you were going to get hung up on for that. But the guy was trying to make the point that RBIs don't mean as much as they used to. RBIs on a team that scores 835 runs, 100 RBIs is not that impressive. Like Nick Swisher knocks in 100 runs.
Right.
So it's not that big of a stat, and RBIs are completely contingent on not completely, but are very contingent on the players around you.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have guys getting on base in front of you, guess what? You're not getting 100 RBIs. So it's a flawed stat. And so the guy was trying to say, like, you know, RBIs really don't mean that much anymore. Get you lost. Lost. He scored 109 runs. Well, Mike, they scored 835 runs last year. Okay? You could have put anybody. You could put a lot of guys in that lineup, and they would have scored 100 runs and knocked in 100 runs. I mean, Nick Swisher did that. Is Nick Swisher some sort of all-star? Come on. You know, so I think Mark Teixeira is in decline. I really do.
Well, but the other thing you got to remember is that every year in April, he bats 100.
I know, but he only hit 248 last year. It's not like he pulled it all the way up to 285.
Well, last year it was April and May.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, he hit 248 with 39 home runs and 115 RBIs or whatever. They scored 835 runs. At some point, you got to admit that the guy's declining.
Well, declining might be a strong word. He's certainly slowing down. He might not be what he once was, but he's still going to be productive in the middle of the lineup.
Yeah.
I don't think you can necessarily write him off just yet.
I'm not saying you have to replace him.
No, of course not.
Nor am I saying he's going to have the precipitous decline that Jason Bay has had, which is inexplicable. But, you know, if the guy hits 245 with, you know, 25 or 30 home runs this year and barely scrapes 100 RBIs, which don't mean anything anyway, you know, can we, and hasn't gotten a clutch hit in 3 years?
I think that's the bigger issue.
Well, but they go hand in hand. How many of those 39 home runs last year meant anything?
Well,
how many were up 12-6?
You know, remember in Yankee land, nothing matters until October. So that's what they're measured on.
Yeah, well, you know what? The Rays are a better team. I'll go ahead and say that. The Rays have a much better rotation. Much better. Markedly better. And the Rays are a better defensive club. Yankees are terrible. I mean, the only team that may be worse than them is the Mets. Defensively.
Well, the Rays are more athletic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they got a little more fire.
The Rays are a better team. Give me all the all-stars you want. The Rays are a better team.
Who do you take, Joe Maddon or Joe Girardi?
Joe Maddon, twice on Sunday.
Yeah, right.
Without a doubt. I think Girardi's tremendously overrated. All you need to know about Joe Girardi is that he walked a guy with his ace on the mound in the first inning of the opening game of the season to load the bases. The first inning. With CC Sabathia on the mound. I'm not saying that the Yankees are on their way to an 82-win season. I'm just saying the Rays are a better ball club. I see a lot of better ball clubs in the American League. I think the Yankees are going to win one of those two wild card spots.
Okay. You will go that far?
I would.
Okay. I think the Angels are a better team.
Agree.
I think what helps the Yankees is the Red Sox appearing to not be the Red Sox anymore.
Totally agree.
I think Detroit might be a better team than the Yankees.
They are, to me.
Toronto's got a good little team, too. I don't know if they're better than the Yankees.
Toronto's going to be awfully tough. If one of those pitchers makes the leap... You know, if Ricky Romero makes the leap, Toronto's tough. How about the Texas Rangers?
Well, the two-time defending AL champions.
Yeah, pretty good.
They're okay.
Yeah.
It's a tough league, you know, and winning a wild card this year is not like winning a wild card in years past because of
nope.
the extra. You do not want to be a wild card team this year.
That's right. Yeah. There's actually something to winning the division this year.
Which I think we both love.
Yes. No, we adore, because it also means that maybe the Mets will have a shot at something in August.
I would wager to say that PJ likes it too.
I think PJ hates it.
Yeah. I think he's happy with the extra wild card.
You know what I do want to talk about and bring PJ in on it, because I'm sure he's read about it too, is this Ozzie Guillen thing.
Hey, do you remember when he was Ozzie Guillen?
Guillen,
yes. What?
You're French now?
He's Creole.
What happened? Right, he's Creole. Ozzie Guillen. Look, Cal, we talked about this with the guys or whatever. This Ozzie Guillen thing, I want to get PJ's take on it because he's the outsider. You know, not the sports fanatic that we are, but he also, I'm sure he's been keeping up with it. It's been in the regular news. It's been on HuffPo.
Oh, wait a minute. Whoa.
What?
The way you said that. Come on.
the way I said HuffPo?
You didn't say HuffPo. You said HuffPo.
Well, I was out of breath. What, I was Charles Nelson Reilly when I said it? HuffPo. We are all doing the world's worst Charles Nelson Reilly. Bye-bye.
If he were dead, he'd be rolling over in his grave.
He's with us. I had no
idea. I think he's still with us.
I think he might be.
I think the glasses are still getting inside the actor's studio with Charles Nelson Reilly. So good.
Forget Ozzy Guillen. Ozzy Osbourne just announced a tour date. He's going to be appearing with Black Sabbath.
I thought, wow. I thought you were going to say Ozzy Osbourne just announced he likes Fidel Castro.
Go ahead, do it. Do it.
Do
I know
what?
You got one.
Have it.
No.
Oh,
oh man.
What a letdown.
Won't do it when pressed.
All right.
All right. Wow, going on tour with Sabbath. That's fantastic. And also, Axl, in music news, Axl Rose turned down the Hall of Fame. Is that correct?
Yeah, he did.
Axl Rose turned down the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Apparently, he wrote a letter to the Hall of Fame.
Was it written in that like that really crazy font that he used on Use Your Illusion?
Yeah.
That font that the lyrics were written in to make you think he's Disturbed.
I heard that he did. I heard that he did 405 drafts of the letter before he released it.
Damn it!
Right. He started writing the letter 10 years ago.
That's right.
And he brought in a whole bunch of other writers on it, and fired writers, and
it was hand delivered by Buckethead. He didn't trust the postal service.
That's right. You know what? One of the bigger problems was he kept layering like more and more, you know, different words and different use. You know, used all sorts of different genres of writing. And
he wrote the first multi-track letter
ever. Right, right. The first 32-track letter.
He did 7 types of ink.
And there was a dolphin involved somehow. I don't know why, but.
And everybody left dissatisfied, so what can you do?
That's correct. And he was 3 hours late to writing it.
I was at Axl Rose letter.
Meh.
I've read better.
So one of the things about the Ozzy Guillen thing, of course, you and I, Cal, as Met fans, had said a while back about the Marlins being a reality show this year and you know, what was it, Real World South Beach?
Yeah.
You know, and Ozzy Guillen and in the confessional and Hanley Ramirez and Reyes and
right with peanut butter,
right? Victor Zambrano down there like a complete circus act waiting to implode. It took 4 days.
Yeah,
it took four days of the baseball season for this interview to come out in Time Magazine, where Ozzy Guillen says, you know, basically Fidel Castro's not a bad guy, and
he respects him.
Right, he respects him because he's been
he
able
respects
to
him for hanging on so long or something like that.
But unfortunately for Ozzy, it's not the first time he's sort of come out in favor of Fidel. He's also Venezuelan. I had no idea of the rift between Venezuelans and there's Cuban Americans and Venezuelans. There's some bad blood there. I had no idea.
It's hot blood. It's blood.
Let's not do that. It's too easy.
I
didn't know about that. You know, he's also come out. Ozzy Guillen has also come out in favor of Hugo Chavez, and so there's a lot of politically charged stuff here. But it comes down to this, to me. First of all, it's not a free speech thing. Everybody tried to make it a free speech thing. It's not a free speech thing. Nobody's putting Ozzy Guillen in jail. He can say whatever he wants. It's a free country. But if you say something like that and your employer is the Miami Marlins and South Beach, and I'm sure Ozzy Guillen has a rider in his contract that's probably 87 pages long. Like, I'm sure that half of his contract is taken up by a behavior clause. you know, I referred to it the other day, and somebody said this was a good way to refer to it, is the conduct unbecoming clause. And if you represent the ball club in any sort of way that we consider unbecoming, we have the right to suspend, fine, fire, etc.
Right.
Dumb Ozzie is so dumb.
How dumb is he?
Dumb Ozzie is so dumb, he called Fidel Castro a blank. Let's go to Nipsey.
He called Fidel Castro the maestro of communism and the peanut brittle.
All right, let's go to Brett Summers. Brett Summers?
I thought about it. I just put cross-dresser.
Fidel Castro's a cross-dresser. Very good.
Oh, Nelson Riley?
He thinks Fidel Castro's a what?
I don't know.
Poppy dresser.
I just wrote Queen.
Okay, as we're done.
It's not a First Amendment issue. So throw that right out. It's not a free speech thing. So throw that right out the window. But Bri, I think it all depends on where he's working that includes the word South. Because he said this on the south side of Chicago, and no one really seemed to care.
Yeah, it was really much ado about nothing the last time he said it.
Right. Now he's in South Beach.
Yeah, well, it's a little different down there.
There tends to be a Cuban or two more.
They might be a little more sensitive to something like that in that area.
Well, all right, so the Marlins suspended him 5 games without pay. Is that just? Did you feel that was just? Do you feel that's going to do the trick? Do you think he keeps his job?
I don't know. I have a hard time believing that he's going to get fired for this. I really do. I think if he had been with the team for 5 or 6 years and this happened...
He's been there 10 minutes.
He's been there 5 games. Not even. It was 3 games. He was five. He was suspended.
He's been in Miami 9 minutes, and he's already managed to alienate the entire Cuban-American population there.
Which accounts for maybe like...
Right, which is like 1.5 million, right, it's like 1.5 million people in Miami.
I mean, they're calling for a boycott of Marlins, the new Marlins Stadium, and that, and everybody has said it, so I'm not, this is not my own original thought. If the ballpark doesn't sell out because people are staying away as a result of what Ozzie Guillen said, he'll lose his job. But I still can't see it happening, though.
Here's an angle I was talking about with my buddy Matt, who, again, is sort of a casual, casual sports fan or whatever. But he's also my political go-to guy. You know, like he and I have had many a political conversation. And Matt was saying, what do you make of this? You know, you're going to talk about it on the show. I said, yeah, we definitely will. And Matt was saying, you know, here's the interesting thing. I don't know if you can fire him without facing a really big wrongful termination suit. Because, I mean, first of all, Ozzie Guillen would be losing a lot of money. Right? He has like a 5-year deal or something like that. Like if they fire him, they'd have to pay him off.
They would still owe him that money.
Right, but I'm saying if they fire him, Bri, they could try to terminate the contract to say that he's in breach of contract because of he defamed
right.
the ball club.
Right, because you're not going to pay a guy for 5 years after he only managed 3 games.
3 games. And so you'd have one hell of a wrongful termination suit on your hands.
That's a good point.
And, you know, he wouldn't necessarily – you'd have to prove that when he was speaking in Time magazine, is he representing the Marlins or is he representing himself?
Right.
Is the reason he's in Time magazine because he's manager of the Marlins or is it because he's just Ozzie Guillen? Whatever. Like, obviously that could get super litigious or whatever, and I would love to handle the depositions. But But
Placement.
TSG reporting for all your deposition needs. Wow, that's the worst product placement ever.
Terrible.
That's terrible. Oh my goodness. What do you call it? I just don't think they can fire him. Unless it gets really does it get really bad?
Well, how bad would really bad have to be?
Hey, look,
I think you only get fired is if you bring up Hitler or the baby Jesus.
That's right. That's true.
And
you
I just
know,
brought
the,
up both. So I'll see you later.
The classic example of that is Marge Schott, who, of course, said something so idiotic, so ridiculous, but she owned the ball club. So Major League Baseball had no choice but to fine her, right? Did they not fine her and suspend her?
I think they suspended her.
Yeah. So she was suspended by Major League Baseball when she came out and said something about Hitler being good or something. Something so idiotic.
Adolf Hitler was initially good for Germany.
That's right. Because he made the trains run on time. Good call.
Right.
Explain, Marge. But you, PJ, you hit the nail on the head. What he said...
Is that a Jesus comment?
Oh, hey-o. Thank you.
Yeah, he was good. He was good in the beginning, but went too far.
Right.
He just went too far.
That's all.
She was also annoyed when umpire John McSherry died on the field.
That's right.
Snow this morning, and now this. I don't believe it. I feel cheated. This isn't supposed to happen to us, not in Cincinnati. This is our history, our tradition, our team. Nobody feels worse than me. Poor man's dead.
Right. This is what Peach, what they're referring to there is umpire John McSherry had a heart attack on the field in opening day. I think it was 1996. Yeah. 96 had a heart attack opening day on the field, died on the field at the Cincinnati for the Cincinnati Reds. And she was all pissed off because it ruined her day.
That's a horrible and dreadful story.
Yeah. She was a sweetheart. She was a good gal. Really a good gal.
Schott was quoted in Sports Illustrated as speaking in a cartoonish Japanese accent while describing her meeting with the Prime Minister of Japan.
I mean, just, wow.
She's the best.
She didn't miss anybody. I'm sure there's some African-American stuff in there, too, while we're at it. I mean,
but you know what? She was...
That'll
she wasn't
fine.
Suspended.
For the Hitler comment?
No. Fine. She just sold her part of the team 3 years later. That's how she went away.
Maybe they couldn't suspend her. I mean, it is a free country.
I guess.
And she doesn't work for Major... I mean, as idiotic as you are, she doesn't work for Major League Baseball. She owns the team.
Well, that is a free speech issue. You do always have the right to be an idiot.
Right. That's the unfortunate part of free speech.
She didn't want her players to wear earrings because only fruits wear earrings. She was known for not wanting to hire scouts, stating that all they ever do is watch baseball games.
Right. Why would you want those guys? Wow. What? Only fruits wear them.
Really, really great.
Yeah, basically your racist grandmother owned a baseball team.
Lot of comments about the African Americans using the politically incorrect term.
Right. So basically, everyone's racist aunt, great aunt, owned a baseball team.
Oh God.
Oh my
goodness.
Don't
let Aunt Margie drink.
Don't. Wow. Aunt Marge is drunk again. Here come the epitaphs.
Here it comes.
So, all right. So. You know, these are funny quotes, and you may be saying, what does this have to do with Ozzie Guillen? Well, here's what it has to do with him. She made all of these comments, and now granted, she was the owner of the team, but
something happened to her.
She was not disciplined for them.
She can't be.
You know, it's like you said, it's free speech.
Now, but he's an employee of the Marlins.
Right.
They have, and this wasn't from Major League Baseball, this was from the Marlins.
Right, which was good because Major League Baseball didn't have any responsibility in that.
They have no jurisdiction here, that's right.
Completely inappropriate for them to take action on him.
Yep. And I think the other thing, too, is that
what I'm trying to understand is that basically what Ozzie Guillen said, you know, about Castro, where he said it and where he works, is akin to saying something like that about Hitler.
Yeah.
I mean, for those Cuban Americans and for Cubans, that's it's, you know, I'm not comparing the atrocities. That's not what I'm trying to do. But I'm saying we can't really wrap our heads around that. We don't live in Miami. We don't know what Fidel Castro is to Cuban Americans and what he represents.
Right.
It's bad. It's not.
You
got to
know
like
your neighbors. I think it comes down to you got to know your neighbors.
Yeah, it's not just saying. And then to be apparently to be a Venezuelan guy and say this is like worse. You know, or to, you know, to be from Venezuela. So again, like what he said is really bad. Really bad.
Now, let's try to figure this out. It's hard to figure out what's going on in his mind. Was he speaking honestly and off the cuff, or was he trying to be, you know, a little bit, you know, towing that line as an outlandish statement? What do you make of why he made these comments?
Well, he said it was – he had two quote-unquote excuses. One of them I buy. The other one I don't. The one that I buy is that his mind is – the way he sort of put it is that his mind – is in Spanish. His thoughts are in Spanish, but he's speaking English. So it came out wrong. In other words, he gave the interview in English.
Right.
But what he's thinking is in Spanish. So the way he's hearing it in his head is in Spanish, and the way it came out in English isn't right. I can almost understand that, because I do know people who English is their second language.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what they're thinking, you know, they're thinking with their native language brain, and it comes out in their in the English is bad. Like, it's not right. So I do sort of buy that to a point. His other excuse, though, about being taken out of context, I don't buy for a second.
Nah.
Because he said it before. You know, he said things like this about Fidel Castro before. So, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me, you can't get fooled again. As a famous president of ours once said.
Roger Daltrey?
That's correct.
President Daltrey?
President Daltrey.
I had a Pakistani neighbor when I was living in an apartment, and he spoke – he was obviously thinking something different in his head than what came out in English. But okay. He wanted to know from me why Americans were always dancing. I was down in the mailroom, and he's like, what are you mailing? I said, I'm getting my mail. Someone is stealing my mail. I said, well, it wasn't me. I haven't seen anybody around here stealing mail. He said, dude, I'm going back to Pakistan because Americans are always dancing. Too much.
Wait,
and that was the whole conversation. But that's not what he meant.
Was he an old Jewish Pakistani?
Americans are always dancing.
Night of a thousand really bad dialects. And all of a sudden we're a morning show. Now PJ's doing bits about his Pakistani neighbor. Now all of a sudden we're Cal and Sam Pete in the morning.
You gotta get a bell.
6:57 a.m. Here's PJ with the weather. It's a hot one out there today. Ooga. I think we're going to be joined by Pakistani PJ in just a couple of minutes.
What are you mailing? You're mailing something.
When do we do the phony phone call?
That's coming up in just a minute.
Nice.
I just right after the break. PJ, I do love that story, though, because you're absolutely right, and I've had that happen as well. When you're talking to somebody whose native language or English is their second language, there's a lot of funny –
you get some strange results.
Yeah, you get some strange results. Like, he obviously didn't mean you Americans are always dancing. And that's a problem. Like, apparently, he learned English by watching Fame.
Or Footloose.
Or Footloose, that's right.
Not sure what he meant.
Life is
but
not
I sympathize
footloose, my
with
friend.
His plan.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think if you're in the limelight, like you're, you know, like Ozzie Guillen, and you're giving an interview to Time Magazine, hey, do it in Spanish and have them translate it. You know, like, do it in your native tongue. So you really, you know, it's like when Kramer says he's going to give little Jerry Seinfeld a bath. And Jerry says to him, hey, Kramer, be careful.
Be careful.
Yeah, I'm going to give little Jerry Seinfeld a bath. Yeah, Kramer, yeah, but be careful. But anyway, the Ozzie Guillen stuff is fascinating. I want to get to the fun load, guys, unless PJ has another old Jewish Pakistani. How did he feel about the pastrami?
The pastrami is always with the pepper.
With the pepper?
You Americans are always dancing, and the pastrami always has the pepper. I think we're talking in code now. The pastrami always
time
has the pepper.
Americans are loading their babies too much.
Before we get to the fun locale, I just wanted to throw in, we talked about Hard Knocks last week with the Jets and the nonsense, and then Rex came out and said he was against it, while Woody said, we'd be open to it. Why not? Let's sell jerseys. And apparently Hard Knocks is going to be the Falcons. So yeah. Allow me to just say, for Jet fans everywhere, wished you. I think Rex gets it. I think Rex understands. You don't win championships with talk and PR. You don't beat the Patriots by being on Hard Knocks. And I think it absolutely cinches the idea, when Woody's so interested in it, that Tebow is Woody's idea.
It's hard to dispute that.
I think they went to Rex and said, look, Woody wants it. Can you work with him? Yeah, I guess so. Fine. Now, I don't think Rex Ryan for a second wanted Tim Tebow. I really don't.
Maybe not.
Or the circus that comes with him. Before we the other thing before we get to the fun load, Cal, I had our buddy Craig wrote in to me. He's listening. And he can't call because the wife is sleeping.
Okay.
But he did want to say this about Guillen. He said, you have to understand, Ozzie also has to appease Venezuelan fans, and Chavez openly supports Castro, and there's a huge fan base there in both countries. Communist comments were not appropriate at all, but his mind is set differently than Americans is. Americans are. No justifications for what he said, but his mind is different than most of us. This is a good point.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, again, the Venezuelan – I don't think we fully understand the Hugo Chavez – tie in with Castro and communism and stuff. Like, I don't think we get that. So, again, it's not a justification by any means. It's, you know, it doesn't matter. He still shouldn't say it.
Right.
Or if he's going to say it, he's got to pay the consequences. And the consequences are, if you're employed by the Miami Marlins, Cuban population 1.5 million in a new ballpark, not so good. Okay, fun load. Did you guys see what I wanted to talk about in the fun load? We got a couple minutes.
Yes.
PJ, did you?
Oh, my cat's here.
Great. I was hoping for a different non sequitur. Got anything else?
I'm out of milk.
So the fun load tonight, the Stanley Cup playoffs started. We were talking about that before. And Cal, the Stanley Cup is the, I think, the best trophy in sports, right? In professional sports.
Explain the best trophy.
Okay, so there's two ways to look at this. There's most coveted trophy, and that would be most coveted championship. That's not what I want to do.
Or we could do that. Or we could do the actual trophy itself.
The physical hardware that you receive for winning a championship.
Right. You have the Vince Lombardi trophy in the NFL. You have the Stanley Cup in hockey. You have the commissioner's trophy in baseball with all the pennants going around.
Right.
And then, what am I missing? Basketball, you have some ridiculous thing.
It's something something O'Brien.
The O'Brien trophy.
We'll but it's not Pat O'Brien.
So
Book of Frosty coupons from Wendy's.
It's the Pat O'Brien trophy. It's got glasses on, and when it comes back, it's going to talk about Jennifer Love Hewitt.
It's a ball. It's like a big basketball, silver basketball.
Well, it's not,
that
it's
may
not.
Be the worst impression of the night.
That wasn't no good, Pat O'Brien?
Not nearly enough.
Is he dead?
Pat O'Brien, just dead water.
Is he dead?
No, Pat O'Brien?
Are you sure?
Pat O'Brien?
Well, he should be.
The insider.
Coming up later, we'll go up Miley's skirt.
Yikes.
I'm watching that.
Hey.
You didn't know that was just in the news? They snapped a Miley Cyrus upskirt photo. It's a big, huge scandal.
Nice.
Yeah.
She also tweeted a picture of her like smelling fast food because there was a rumor that she had an eating disorder. So she tweeted a picture of her smelling a bag of fast food, and it says, and the caption was, "I can't eat it, so I'm going to smell the blank out of it." I can't eat it, so I'm going to smell the blank out of it. Nipsey Russell.
Fanny Flag.
Fanny Flag. That was what I couldn't think of. Fanny Flag. Thank
Fanny
you.
Flag.
Where did she go?
I can't eat it, but I'm going to smell the feet in it.
Now you sound like Kenan Thompson doing the trio.
Boy.
The classic Stampede impression once removed.
That's correct.
Right.
I love it.
And I do impressions of people doing impressions.
Yep.
Okay, so you're completely blowing up the fun load here. Stick with me. Four trophies. Oh, just forget it.
No, let's do it. Come on. This is fun.
Miley's also being accused of going in public and showing too much side boob.
Will you stop? Really?
Yeah. She's wearing shirts with no brassiere.
Side boob.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter.
That's such a great Family Guy moment. Family Guy's pretty much jumped the shark, haven't they?
No.
No.
Beautiful show. Love it. Love it every
it's
week.
It's still great? I haven't
still,
watched it
still
in a really
great.
Long time. Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to get back into it. That's my bad.
They revisit quite a few things, but it's still great.
That was when Peter had the side boob channel. It was just all going to be just all shots of side boob. My side boob.
Well, that's taken off because now there are side boob blogs.
Yes, I know.
So, I mean,
that's so disturbing. By the way, anybody see the trailer for Ted? Speaking of
not,
Seth MacFarlane?
They're not at all in my favorites folder. What?
Anybody see the trailer for Ted?
Not yet, no.
Looks tremendous.
Is that the Seth MacFarlane vehicle?
That's the Seth MacFarlane one where he's the voice of Mark Wahlberg's teddy bear.
Got it.
But like foul-mouthed, ridiculous Boston teddy bear that like somehow lives with Mark Wahlberg. And like they're like roommates, and like Mark Wahlberg meets a girl and stuff, and she's like, "You got to get rid of Ted," and it's him doing like a Boston accent. It looks very funny. That's all I'm saying. Okay, Stanley Cup, Commissioner's Trophy, Lombardi Trophy, the Pat O'Brien Trophy.
You want to throw the Masters green jacket in there?
No, I don't.
Okay,
just going trophies. And
the
comparing
Masters.
Them
you
to
get, there's a sizable trophy at the Masters.
And comparing them to, yes, that big check. Comparing them to
there's a trophy ceremony as well as the jacket.
But the jacket's the important thing. Who cares about the trophy?
I could say the same thing here.
Yikes.
No, no. The Stanley Cup is the Stanley Cup. You get to take it. Every player gets to have it. They add your name to the thing. It's been around for 100 years. It's the Stanley Cup.
Like the Blarney Stone.
I just want to compare them to the four acting trophies.
Hmm. The Tony.
Yes.
The Emmy.
Correct.
The Oscar.
Yes.
And the Cable Ace Award.
That's correct.
I would go SAG.
The Clio.
The Clio.
No, the Golden Globe.
The Golden Globe, okay.
Would we all agree that that order of best trophy would be Oscar, Golden Globe, Emmy, and Tony? Or actually, well, you could do it, you know.
I think you put the Tony over the Golden Globe.
Yeah, I think so, too.
What about a Grammy?
Grammy's music. Just want to stick to acting.
You're just sticking to acting.
That's right.
Kids' Choice Award.
Is not a nice trophy.
Okay.
How about the MTV Award?
What about the SAG?
SAG Award is the mask and wig and stuff. It's really, it's hackery. Plus you got to, no good. No, no good. Those are the four. Look, Jerk Store is a funny line, and it would work on a smart audience. Okay, we're going with Oscar, Golden Globe, Emmy, Tony, and I'm saying the Stanley Cup is like the Oscar.
That would be your analogy.
I'm gonna give you my analogies. You guys can give me yours. How's that?
Oh, great! I love this game.
He's being facetious. I hate when he's facetious.
Yo, I'm not tired anymore.
What happened to tired Cal?
I'm energized now.
All right. Oscar is the Stanley Cup, okay, the trophy, the one that you want, the best trophy in sports. I have the Golden Globe as the Major League Baseball trophy. It's nice, not thrilling, but nice. You have the Tony to me is the... basketball trophy, nobody even knows what it looks like. And then the Emmy is the Lombardi trophy. It's very nice, very coveted. Now, I may want to – okay, I'm going to stick with that. What do you got?
Mine's easy. I would agree with you on all four of them.
Really?
I would. I don't think – if you rank them in order of importance or – covetedness?
That's different.
Okay, so we're doing covetedness.
Do covetedness, okay.
Okay, so it's in sports, Stanley Cup.
Is one.
Is one, to me.
I agree.
The Lombardi Trophy would be two.
Okay.
The Major League Baseball Flag Trophy would be three.
Right.
And then the silver basketball on a stand.
Would be a distant four.
Yeah, it's like... You know, that's one of those things where they give it to you and it's like, it's great, but give me the champagne, you know. Just kind of pass it off.
Right, like we had to have a trophy.
Right.
We had to give them something.
Now, I would argue that the championship rings that the players receive are much more coveted than the trophy that they win.
Except the Stanley Cup.
Except the Stanley Cup. Like a Super Bowl ring is so much more important to a player than winning that trophy. Because
the Lombardi's come a long way, though.
Yeah, it has. You're right. They do the ceremony on the field now, which
right.
They never always did.
Yep. The Lombardi's come a long way. I feel like the Lombardi's, that's why I think I made it the Golden Globe. Did I make it the Golden Globe?
No, you made it the Emmy.
I want to switch that.
Because the Golden Globe has come a long way?
The Golden Globe has come a long way now.
Yeah.
The Lombardi Trophy itself has probably moved into second now.
But wouldn't the Golden Globe be more like an AFC Championship trophy?
Right, and the Lombardi is the Oscar.
Right, because it's kind of like the...
Right. The Hunt Award, right? Isn't that the Hunt Trophy?
The Golden Globe is like getting picked for the All-Star team. It's the foreign press voting.
and the fans vote on it. Actually,
yeah,
getting voted for the All-Star game is like the People's Choice Award.
That's right.
Choice, a little too much.
Right. It's the People's Choice Award. It's the Lamar Hunt Trophy, correct?
That's the AFC Trophy.
That's the
yeah.
AFC. The NFC is the
Halas Trophy.
The Halas Trophy.
Right. George
Pop Bear. All right. So that's a great call. The People's Choice Award is definitely like making an All-Star game.
That's true.
Yeah. I like that. I think I like where we're going. See, all of this is because the Stanley Cup. All right. I got to hold a miniature. All the players get miniatures of the Stanley Cup, by the way.
That's right.
When you win a Stanley Cup, you get a miniature exact replica. You know, and only the players that win that Stanley Cup get it. And I actually got to hold one. And I also saw the Stanley Cup when I went to the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. But and I took a picture next to the Stanley Cup.
If you've been to the Hall of Fame, everybody has. It's the same thing with the Stanley.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really impressively displayed.
It's fantastic. Like the Stanley Cup is like a grail. It really is.
I was expecting
to see like an old knight there.
Right. With guards with swords and
I was expecting to see like a Knight Templar there, like knew you'd come.
You must choose.
Choose wisely. And of course the greatest line in any maybe in any Indiana Jones movie ever. He chose poorly. But yeah, it's either that or you expect to see some sort of French Canadian Mounties around it, something.
Right.
It was very, very cool. But I got to hold the mini one. And, it's just awesome. Like, you can't imagine the Stanley Cup. Can't imagine it. That's the one. That's why when you see, like, players like, all the players get to keep it for a week or something like that in the office.
That's great.
And you see guys like with it in the pool and stuff like that, like at a pool party and stuff, like really like sort of disrespecting it, I get a little annoyed.
It was at the bottom of somebody's pool. Maybe Mario Lemieux's pool.
It might have been. Well, he's such a classy guy, Cal.
All right. Let's not go there.
Oh boy. Did you see who's on the statue that he put out in front of his team's arena?
No.
Mario Lemieux, the owner, one of the owners of the Penguins, is he not?
He is.
Yeah, so nothing like erecting a statue of yourself out in front of your arena. Oh, and guess who it's against?
Probably the Islanders.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a statue of him going between Richie Pilon and the famous goal he scored. P.S. They lost that series. But, that's the statue he put out front.
Wow.
Of him splitting Richie Pilon, and not even of him scoring a goal. It's him going between two Islanders.
Right. Again, really great. To put it, that series they lost to the Islanders.
That's correct.
It's the last playoff series the Islanders have won.
That's also correct. No, it's not.
What?
No, it's not. They won. Didn't they win the first series with Pekka?
No, they lost that to Toronto.
Oh, they lost that series in seven. You're right.
They lost that in seven.
Right, because Pekka got hurt, and so did Janssen. We could do this all night. We're over time here.
That's okay. Real quick, Joe Nieuwendyk presented the Stanley Cup once to his blind professor.
What was that, like on a very special Stanley
Cup? At Cornell University.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like that.
There's a book. There's a book called Why is the Stanley Cup in Mario Lemieux's Swimming Pool? And it's all kinds of tales of where the cup has wound up.
Yeah, don't get me started on Mario Lemieux.
It's just the title of the book.
Good. Good. Should be. What is it doing in Mario Lemieux's Swimming Pool, Cal?
I haven't read the book. You find that disrespectful, don't you?
Extraordinarily so.
Wow.
Probably holding the liner down. He might have had a bubble.
And that's why he only won two. Oh, just two.
The prestigious trophy has held everything from beer to infants.
See, now that's a trophy.
You can't do that with any other trophy.
That's right. What are you going to do? Put an infant in the commissioner's trophy for baseball?
As a matter of fact, I don't believe the players get any time with the other trophies. Like,
no.
Right? Like a Super Bowl winning player doesn't get to take the Vince Lombardi trophy home with him for a day, does he?
Exactly. Well, exactly.
I don't think.
Yep. But like I said, they do sort of march the Lombardi around now. Like it used to be just like give it to the owners or whatever. Now that all the players sort of touch it and they take it around, and the ring is still the thing, no doubt.
Right.
They run it around like the Olympic torch.
Yeah.
They kind of do.
They really do. They much more celebrate it now than they used to.
And they do it with the baseball trophy also.
Yeah, the baseball trophy is always, to me, presented to the owner and the owner and the GM and the manager. Like, the players don't give a crap about the trophy.
And it definitely recalls the Seinfeld episode with George Costanza driving around the parking lot of Yankee Stadium,
dragging the trophy. So he can get fired.
Were either of you ever impressed by the championship belt of the World Wrestling Federation?
No.
Maybe when I was 9.
Well, that's what I mean.
No,
not really.
It always changed.
That's right. It was never the same.
They always had a different one. Every time you turn around.
They always had a different one.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. The heavyweight championship belt is pretty impressive.
Which one?
In
WBC,
boxing.
WBA, IBF, WBO.
When they were united, Cal. All right.
Well, that was what was
boxing
cool.
Was boxing.
That's right.
What was cool about that was when they would walk around with all three championship belts.
Right.
Because they were the unified champion of all three federations.
And you had to be a heavyweight champion just to lift
right.
all three of them at one time.
You'd have one around your neck, one around your waist. You'd have your boy carrying one.
Rory Holloway was always carrying one.
Rory Holloway.
For Tyson. That's my boy Rory. All right, we got to end the show, boys. Let's end this thing.
All right.
Hey, let's do this. Final unload, TJ.
In addition to suggestive photos of Miley Cyrus, I will also be blogging heavily suggestive photos of Selena Gomez.
Hey,
I don't know if that's. I don't think that's.
If you're pushing a little
perfectly,
bit.
Perfectly legal. And not at all creepy.
Have you done your due diligence on that?
Not at all creepy.
Okay.
We'd like to thank PJ for his participation in Ready to Unload. Tonight will be his last episode. Thanks, PJ.
And we wish him well in his future endeavors.
Good luck in your future endeavors. Give Ozzie Guillen a call. All right, Cal, final unload.
I am excited about the Knicks. 8 games left, 2 games up on a playoff spot. Hopefully by this time next week we'll be really gearing up for NBA playoff talk on this station.
On this station, right. And my final unload is Mike Wallace passed away. And somebody brought up a great point. You know, Mike Wallace... great broadcaster and stuff, but I remember him from the Biography Channel. I've always loved the Biography Channel, and I found him very educational. He's one of my favorite. He's not as good as Peter Gray, but I have not come here to disrespect Mike Wallace. No, honestly, Mike Wallace was a fantastic broadcaster and a guy that I thought was really great. And nobody really said anything about him passing away this week. I felt like so. Anyway, Mike Wallace. Thanks. All right, that is all the time we have on Ready to Unload. Check out the website, www.rtusports.com. PJ is writing a lot of funny stuff there. He wrote a song for Notorious Lightweight. And we'll be back next week probably with Phil Pito. So check us out then. Thanks.